there's a freedom in this process that, like, it takes a while to get used to. Like, once you get into it, it's, like, hard to reel it back in.
This photography podcast is brought to you by Frames, quarterly printed photography magazine. Here is your today's host, W. Scott Olsen, with another fascinating conversation.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another podcast from Frames Magazine. My name is Scott Olsen, and today we're going to have so much fun today. I am really, really excited because we're talking with Kimberly Schneider. Kimberly, you may remember, was Frames Magazine Artist in Residence back in August of 2022. Did a magnificent series back then. She is a photographer, a visual artist, an educator, and really identifies mostly with being a master printer. She specializes, you know, before COVID, in spiritual landscapes, true infrared film, experimental photograms. We're going to get into what photograms and all that stuff is. And my God, what a resume. We're talking the Scott Nichols Gallery, Photo Forward in LA, Camera Obscura Gallery, San Diego Art Institute, Lightbox Photographic, and still my favorite, the Stonehenge Gallery. Still like that one the best. She's been, oh my heavens, let's see, the 18th Julia Margaret Cameron Awards, the 17th Julia Margaret Cameron Awards. Guess what? The 16th Julia. It just goes on and on. Really, really tremendous. And to my way of thinking, evocative and provocative and important work. Kimberly, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
Hi, great. All right, thank you so much. That was so nice. That was a lovely intro.
It's lovely work. I mean, this is, I love it when, you know, the stuff that you think you know, you think you got your mind wrapped around, somebody comes along and just explodes it and says, no, so much more is possible than your little imagination over there. And that's the relationship.
Yeah, you got that. I know I'm a little out there sometimes. I'm an Aquarius. What can I say?
Well, you know what? You know what, Kimberly? Most of the time when we do these podcasts, you know, we sort of start with history and work up to the present time. I want to do something different in this conversation with you because you have got news. You've got a book coming out. Veritas Editions is doing a new book of yours, Equivalent. So give us the pitch to tell us about this new book that's coming
funding,
out.
And it's pretty ambitious because basically, I need the funding, not just for the book itself, for my portion of the book cost, but also to make the work that I envision for the book. Mm-hmm. Two parallel bodies of landscape work, which is inspired, they'll be made in two different processes. You know, for 20 plus years before 2020, I was exclusively a film photographer who specialized in true infrared film, and COVID got me into experimental work. And so these two parallel bodies of work is going to be one traditional film photographs, and then one will be cameraless photographs made with materials collected in those same locations. So basically, I need funding to travel out west to a bunch of states, at least four different locations, in different states, collect the materials, come home, print it all, get a ton of paper, pump out the work, and then start working on the actual production costs. And some of this also has to go towards my darkroom because I live in New York, rents are killer, and my darkroom is at home, and my rent's about to go up. So it's in need of a lot of funding, but I'm super excited about the work. Veritas has been the dream forever. This will be a handcrafted collector's edition book that will literally have prints as part of the book and also look enclosed, like with the design somehow, like within the clamshell. You know, it's not going to be your average book by a long shot. So I'm super psyched, but I need a lot of funding. For best case edition. My biggest hope is that the Guggenheim Fellowship will also contribute and that my GoFundMe will be fully funded so that I can have the best version of the book and possibly even be able to afford to have shows of the work as well. You know,
I'm really excited about this one. But okay, let's go back just a little bit. So pre-COVID, pre all that stuff, you specialized in what you called spiritual landscapes and true infrared. Now, first of all, what's true infrared versus false infrared? Well, I mean,
there is no true infrared on the market. I forget if it's like 920 nanometers or like 820 offhand, but it's, mm-hmm. There used to be like true, there were different companies that made it. I mean, I've been using, I was exclusively infrared until it became hard to get. Starting with 2001, about a decade ago. Well, F. Key was still making infrared film until 2009. I could still find some of that. And I can sort of find it like on eBay if I hunt, but they stopped making it. So they have this like infrared stuff where it's like, I mean, I need to retest it, but it's Rolly makes a like infrared now, and there's SFX, but the Rolly is, it's like a 400 ISO. It's like a red filter kind of thing. You know, I am like a 87 filter, opaque filter, long exposures. Like, it's a special thing. You know, I kind of like just, it's different, but anyway. So I've always been a spiritual, I fell into photography by way of Eastern religions, and it all sort of mixed early on. So my process is, there's a lot of stuff from my Eastern leanings that comes through in my photographs and my process.
I mean, you have a degree in photography, but also in philosophy. So, I mean, tell me, what is the relationship between philosophy, between Eastern thought and image making?
Well, this is kind of crazy. So I went through like a million majors, like when I was younger, finally had settled on philosophy. I decided to move on, to go to school at Colorado State University. It was cheaper out of state than in state in Illinois. All set to become a philosopher, you know, I'm studying philosophy. I'm getting into it. And, we had one required art class where we had to actually make a project. And I had this black and white film. Like, I'd always wanted to learn manual photography, but I just never had a chance. And I was talked out of art lifetime ago because I hate drawing. Long story short, I started working for a photographer and I was bored of just doing administrative stuff. Bit the bullet, became an art major to take my first photography class. Fell completely in love, was terrified of the expressive nature of my work initially. And Minor White, who is my reason for everything, he was a photographer. He was very into Buddhist thought. For him, he talked about equivalence, which a lot of my, he's the reason that I got into the whole equivalent to anything with photography, which is looking at your images for what they are and what else they can be. But anyway, when I started looking at his poems and his work, and it was so personal, I was like, oh, it's okay to put it all out there. Like, cause I grew up in a family where that's just not like really normal, you know, like expression isn't necessarily, encouraged, except for, well, of the living members, you know, but, you know, it was different for me. And once, you know, Minor White kind of opened me up to a whole new way of thinking. And subconsciously, like a lot of the Eastern things that I was studying, like came through in my work. I always say my photography is a very Taoist practice. Like basically, it's like, you know, I mean, like, especially with the photograms, it's like I'm playing in the dark room, but all of my prior knowledge informs what I'm doing, even if I'm not thinking about it at that moment. I already like know how to do it. So I'm just kind of letting intuition guide me. You know, and I'm doing some, you know, film-based work. I have to be precise about certain things, you know, I can be less precise with photograms. I'm not sure if that really explained it. Basically, it's all just kind of mixed together. And then
that's the great thing about it, but keep going.
To continue with Minor White, Minor White is the reason I got into infrared film in the first place in 2001. He worked with infrared. And when I started doing infrared film, I realized it translated like this spiritual, like deeply subconscious stuff, like, in a way, nothing else did. I started like seeing things in the prints. It was just this weird, like deep meditative thing that started happening in the darkroom. And that's kind of the photographer I became. It's like, I can't like print personal work without some like, you know, weird spiritual thing happening, or like the poetry starts coming to me. Like, I don't know what my work is really about. And so I begin printing it. And then I start to see that in the images. I don't know how to really explain that with words. We might have a little edit over here.
Now, when you were in the art class, I mean, did they take you into the darkroom too, or was it all field work? I mean, do you remember your first early prints?
Well, I mean, it's kind of crazy because I actually, when I was in high school, I took one photo class, which was like not really like an art class. It was like, you're allowed to make pinhole cameras with oatmeal boxes. And you're allowed to stand in the darkroom but not use the enlargers. Ironically, my portfolio was like stolen. Like I'd left it there like during finals, come back. My portfolio was stolen and I really wanted to do photography, but my guidance counselor told me, he's like, you can't go to art school. You hate drawing. You're like never going to be able to be an artist. So whatever. So they talked me out of it. So anyway, when I finally, before I joined the art program, there was one art class. It was like just a general like art survey class. at the end, they said, if you want to like experiment with one, but with one, you know, experiment with art in some way, like you get extra credit. And I always was curious about photography, and it was my first time in the mountains, and I was shooting black and white. I mean, it was an automatic camera at the time, but something just clicked. And it just, it gave me the push to decide that I'm going to be an art major. And I couldn't even get into photo class for 2 semesters. It was always full. But when I got into my first photo class, yes, it was all darkroom. It was all analog. And I went there never shooting manual a day in my life.
Let's take just a quick break. We hope very much that you are enjoying today's episode. The very fact that you are listening to this podcast suggests that photography means a lot to you. And if that's the case, you might want to have a look at Frames, quarterly printed photography magazine. We truly believe that excellent photography belongs on paper. Visit readframes.com to find out more about our publication and use the coupon code podcast to receive a recurring 10% discount on your new Frames magazine subscription. And now, back to today's conversation.
You identify mostly as a printer. I mean, certainly you're a photographer and everything else as well. But, you know, if we had to center your definition, it would be mostly around what happens in the darkroom. And I want to get to your actual darkroom and the adventure it is to have a darkroom in New York City. But there's one more term you use. I'd just love to hear you explain a little bit for people that are listening. A lot of us are landscape photographers. You are emphatic that you've photographed spiritual landscapes. What do you mean?
The thing is, when I'm making photographs, I go by where I'm pulled to, but I don't know what that work is about until I get in the darkroom. I process, you know, I develop the film, I start making prints, and I see something in the prints that just, it basically speaks to me in the darkroom. I don't know how else to explain it. Mm-hmm. And there's like something, you know, my work is about, there are like layers of depth to my work where there's like, what you see at first glance, it's not what the work is about at its core. It's like, you have to look deeper and spend time with it. And for me, that just happens like when I'm in the darkroom printing, I just start seeing things and poetry starts coming to me and I'm like, oh wow, I didn't even know I was thinking about that. Or I had no idea, like, you know, it's like I have this big epiphany and that's basically how the work begins to take shape. And it keeps happening as I'm printing. And it happens mostly when I photograph, you know, it happens more from landscape photography, which is why I went from street photography and photo one. And after Minor White, I became a full-fledged landscape photographer, even though I don't camp. At the time, I hadn't even been like proper hiking when I started doing landscape and was terrified initially. My roommate, just left me in this like rocky area and like went fly fishing. And I was like, oh my God, how am I gonna walk with the camera? once I learned how to print and I started like seeing that in the images, I've never been able to separate myself from the work. That's what it is. It's like somehow like there's just something subconscious that happens. Like when I'm making photographs of the land, it's like a part of me is exposed. I don't even know what it's about until I'm printing, and then it decides to show itself when it does. I don't know. It's kind of hard. It's very strange. I was really into like Eastern religions and it just sort of found its way into my work and never left. Like, I don't really like think about it at the time, but I mean, when I talk about it, it's the process, you know, it's just very, it's like go with the flow, but not, I don't know how else to really.
So, okay. You have a story that you know, when I read it, when I look at it, I'm thinking there's a movie in here somewhere. and that you decide to, you know, build a, you know, a dark room 12 and a half seconds before COVID hits.
Correction, the same building.
Yeah. So, I mean, tell people the story of the dark room.
Okay. Well, first of all, this is my second dark room in the same building. And 2017, I was pretty much destroyed because I lost my prior darkroom to rent hikes. For 3 years, I was just like fighting to get, like I had to move out. I was in this horrible month to month sublet. The darkroom was in storage. I wasn't making art. I was just trying to find stable work, which I finally had, even though it wasn't like exactly enough to live on without printing work. But anyway, in 2019, I pulled the contents of my prior darkroom out of storage and moved back into my darkroom friendly building. It took 7 months to find one plumber willing to do anything with the space. By the grace of God, you know, it was like a Thanksgiving miracle. I found him Thanksgiving in 2019. And his part, like, it still needs some work, but it was like essentially like done, but not pretty, like 2 weeks before the shutdown. Meanwhile, the dry side hadn't been touched, you know, it was taking over 2/3 of my living room. I mean, it was just, but that's basically how, that's how the photograms happened, is basically after 3 months in total isolation, I was dying to print. I started messing around. I had no expectations. I basically like thought I was just like killing time, like, because I couldn't, until I could basically use the enlarger properly. And somehow along the way, like I started playing in the darkroom and like falling in love with these, like this weird way of printing, which is like the opposite of everything I ever learned. And it got me work, you know, got me work again. I was like selling prints suddenly. And this is right after I lost that stable job early on to the pandemic. I actually lost my prior job in July 2020, 3 days before my first post COVID, you know, new darkroom interview came out. and I was like, oh, okay. So I was planning initially, I'm like, I'm going to promote film-based work for what I do, you know, down the road as soon as I can get some darkroom help. You know, I mean, meanwhile, 4 years later, I've had a little darkroom help. I mean, I still need some more work on the darkroom, but it's like, I can take film-based work, just not like crazy jobs and nothing rushed, but like, I still don't have a proper darkroom guy. I'm pumping out prints. I'm like, you know, I'm teaching out of the darkroom. I'm printing for other artists. So, I mean, it's a godsend, but like, it's something I'm, you know, fighting rent hikes every day. You know, things aren't stable. And I'm working remotely out of my home darkroom, which is private. So.
Well, I'm looking forward to talking about the teaching here in a few minutes, but a lot of people are not going to know what a photogram is and how you first came to, because we're talking no camera, no enlarger, but you got photo paper and you got developer and you've got all, I mean, this is, you know, stuff that you had in your artist in residence series. You've got a lot of stuff going into your prints that none of the rest of us have.
Let me start from the beginning. Okay, so basically a photogram is a unique darkroom print. And instead of using a camera or a negative, you have your photo paper or your light-sensitive material. You place your materials directly on top of it, expose it with your light source, and then you print. And because the enlarger was nowhere near set up, I started with flowers and a flashlight, which moved on to... Well, snow was the photogram material that changed everything. We had one snowfall in February 2022, and I decided to scoop some up, and I'm like, what the hell, I tried for a photogram material. Fell in love with it, and that's when the whole, like, snow, ice, sand, glitter, weird processes, like, working my materials started happening. And I started finding myself, you know, before, you know, a lifetime ago, like, when I was just graduating from college, printmaking was my second love, and I've been trying to get back into printmaking for a long time. And those processes kind of, like, found their way back into my photographs at that time, which just changed everything. These days, somehow my experimental work, you know, working with all these materials, subconsciously, I started seeing things like landscapes, like locations in my photograms all of a sudden, which led to my plans for the book, as I briefly started mentioning before I really like got into the process. I've been working with, I taught a brief class in California this past July. And while I was there, I collected some beach sand, some Pacific Ocean water, some seaweed, which smells like something horrible right now. Like I'm just trying to floss the rest of it. I have some like dried palm leaves and things left over for my workshop. But I basically had them shipped home to me, and I've been working with them for location-specific materials. So I'm making unique landscape photographs without a camera, you know, from my darkroom with those materials that were like literally from those places. And it inspired me to get back into film-based landscapes as well, which is, anyway, that's the whole parallel for the book is.
Yeah, that is so cool. But okay, just, I mean, because I'm still having a hard time.
I know, I feel like I'm going in circles here. Maybe, can we?
No. But you gather up a bunch of snow, you come in the house, and you know, you put it in the fridge or whatever for a minute, but then you just shut off the lights, get out some photo paper, dump snow on it, and then into developer?
Well, no, okay. So when I started with snow, I mean, I like to work my materials. Like I do like mixed process, like triple exposures. All right, let me step back. Before I got into snow, at first it was flowers. Then it was motion studies with flowers and like saran wrap and maybe a little bit of foil. Then glitter came. Then I started doing triple exposures with a firework LED light.
And exposure is just shining it with your flashlight.
Well, by then I had moved on from the flashlight to more experimental light sources. I have this I have this firework LED, which is what I started with before I was brave enough to try sparklers, which are still kind of a pain. But it's basically an LED light. It has all these cycles. It looks kind of like sparklers. So I started exposing with that. And I eventually got into, because back then I was still kind of a traditional printer at heart. I wanted to like really play with the contrast. So I started wrapping my light source with different filters and things so I could at least get the contrast like closer to what I wanted it to. And as I did that, I started like messing with my materials, like moving them around the paper sometimes, or like throwing something in, or when I got into like the snow, I started like really smushing it in around on the paper and then letting it work with the other materials as I was exposing or between my exposures. And most of my exposures are like triple exposures. If you look at some of the like frames from, you know, my residency, I have like videos where I was actually like showing to a point, or at least talking through the exposures as I do them. It's kind of hard to explain without showing you, like, you know, visually or talking you through it. But basically, I have my piece of paper, put my materials on it. I expose them once, like normally. Then I kind of do something to them before I do another exposure. Then I kind of do something else.
In the early stages, did you have any clue at whatsoever about what the actual print would look like?
No, the thing is, you know what's crazy is because my enlarger wasn't set up, I've actually never made a photogram with a timer. Like, and I think it's good because it's forced me to become intuitive with the process. But like, it's like, I know I've been working with these materials so often and I've pushed my processes so far over the past 4 years that like, I have a general sense, but like, a lot of times I don't know every different variable changes things. Every time I change papers or change developers, I get different results. So, I mean, there's a lot of trial and error. There's a lot of MacGyvering things, like learning to rig things. A lot of it's just the serendipity of things, where it's the magic of the not knowing, where it's like not knowing what you know, which is kind of going back to my Taoist process, where it's like, intuition guides it, but that knowledge is all there. And when you work with the material for over and over again, you get a sense of how it's going to respond. At least if you stick to the same paper, you know, the same light source. Does that kind of...
There's no camera, there's no lens, there's no film, there's no enlarger. And yet you are coming up with these wonderful, wonderful, evocative, deeply emotional pieces on photo paper. And, you know, I'm sure somebody, if not everybody out there is going, well, yeah, the word photography means painting with light. This is absolutely mainstream stuff by one definition. Why did this... I mean, I know you're a printer at heart. Why did this sustain you? Why did this keep you going more than, say, the landscape stuff?
Well, you know, in the beginning it did. In the beginning, I kept getting in my head about it. It was driving me crazy, certain like technical things. And you know, I was in isolation for so long. Like, I was just like, I needed to make art. And like, printing is the only thing that I can like do that just like, it's the only like spiritual release for me. So I was just like, I've got to like find some way of like, I need to like get, you know, it'd been 3 years pre-COVID. That I hadn't been able to print consistently, you know, because I didn't have the dark room. I was like, I just have to make art, like, one way or another. So I just started messing around. I mean, I went into the Amazon loophole. Like, in the beginning, I was like, oh, I like this, but this is kind of interesting, you know, and I kept losing interest, going back and forth. And I started doing weird things, and that's what kind of got me into it. I started working with, like, sparklers and, like, glitter glue and Play-Doh. And suddenly, it was, like, fun. I was like, these are coming out really cool. Like, wow. And then you know, the spiritual printer, I was like that kind of like, you know, it was like after all the years of not printing, I was kind of out of practice. And a lot of the subconscious stuff like wasn't coming out as easily with the photograms. But I started seeing things in the prints as I realized these aren't just photographs. You know, these are true equivalents, you know, because they're, you look at, you change the orientation and you see something else completely different in them. It was just serendipity. Like if I wasn't in isolation so long, I would have given up so long ago. Like I would have lost interest. I mean, I got in my head about it a lot at the beginning, but it was, I don't know. I think I was getting bored of them. And then I got into ice, especially during the residency. I got really into ice. And that happened because the snow was gone and we didn't have snow again until just recently. And I actually did scoop some up, even though there was barely any. I mean, it was mostly like ice and it was like.
So, okay. You do printing for other people. Tell me about that.
Well, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, I actually, before I lost the prior dark room, that's a lifetime ago. I worked in medical publishing and that's what paid the bills while I was getting my dark room, you know, running dark room space and then initially setting up my own dark room. When that industry basically moved to China and the company I was working for went under, I was printing for other artists, but it wasn't stable. But I mean, I was taking on printing work, you know, other black and white photographers. You know, I'm a photo nerd, and like, you know, printers and like black and white photographers kind of find each other. So people would know me. It wasn't stable, but I mean, I was doing it as long as I could until just the rents priced me out. So then, you know, I hadn't done anything with that for a long time. And then when I lost my, I worked in a different industry. I worked in production before the pandemic. And when I lost that job, whereas an interview was coming out, and I had some former coworkers that agreed to like, they set me, like they set up the dry side. Like they didn't really know, they don't know like darkroom stuff, but they at least got it. So it was like sort of okay. And like, I at least had a table set up. I could use it. So I was like, okay, I'm going to promote my printing services again, because, you know, I have this darkroom. There's only so much I can do remotely, you know, like this is what I specialize in. And I had my first printing client, I believe it's in November 2020. And then everything just got worse with the pandemic. So I ended up actually, we'll get into that more later, but I ended up doing mostly like remote teaching work for a long time. And I just had got my first remote printing job recently, which I'm actually waiting for the negatives right now. But I want to do more printing, you know, I want to do more printing work, and I have one potential darkroom helper that might have some time next month to like tweak it a little bit better. But I mean, I still like, theoretically, I can take on printing jobs for up to 16 by 20, black and white negatives, or contact prints. I also am open to like custom, like, you know, hybrid, maybe half experimental, half traditional, like whatever, like commissions people want, but really like have black and white negatives, or you want to have digital negatives made, I will print for you and make beautiful prints.
Tell me what the, I mean, and this is going to sound like heresy, but I know a lot of people sort of ask this under their breath. You know, I'm sitting at my computer. I'm done with a file. There's a little button that says submit, and I can send it off to a commercial printer, and, you know, get it back within 4 or 5 days. Tell me the difference between that kind of mass production approach and what's going to happen in your darkroom.
You know, it's funny. So I actually worked in that industry pre-COVID. Well, they didn't sell the darkroom, but anyway, the thing is with me is like, I basically can pull like the emotion out of the print, which commercial labs, if those particular printers have the skills, they don't have the luxury of taking the time to do that in most cases, unless they're like very, very specialized and very, very high end. You know, they're pumping them out just like, it's a job. You know, if this isn't burned in perfectly, fine. If this is a little too dark, that's fine. Like if, you know, for me, it's about making the strongest, best, like most gorgeous print you can get. You know, I'm making works of art. I'm not just making like a print for, for a company.
You know, but there is an art to printing. I mean, not just a skill, there is an art, and it relies upon a certain aesthetic, a certain level of experience, a certain level of knowing, in a collaborative sense, when you're printing for others, what the photographer intends.
Right,
I know a number of people who are really, really into printing, and it's a really underappreciated art because we're so accustomed to seeing these beautifully backlit things on our screens these days. You know, what do you do beyond that?
Well, that's true, but I don't print like your average printer. I mean, there are some printers that are very like, they have, these are the rules. This is how you have to always do it. For me, I'm a spiritual printer, and if I can give clients like a few options, and I say, you know, you can pop the contrast a little bit more and look how much stronger that is. Or like, if you do this, just look how much more motion you get from that, you know? So, I mean, I do go above and beyond, but I also, that spiritual printer in me isn't just limited to my own work. Like it's different, but I mean, some of that does translate as I'm printing for other artists too.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, like so many things, someone's going to look at your work and say, you know, Kimberly's work speaks to me. I'm going to seek her out for my work as well. And there's, you know, people that are going to look at it and say, okay, you know, we're on different pages here. But like I said at the beginning, I mean, your stuff, you know, part of an awards program, it's at the Louvre. It's in Barcelona. It's in Ireland. You know, the world is responding to the emotional, the spiritual side of the work that you're putting out there. And boy, if you can add that to somebody else's, full speed ahead.
I think a lot of people that really like kind of catch on to that. So I appreciate that. You know, it took the photograms for people to open their eyes and be like, oh, okay. And a lot of people still think I forgot about film because I've been doing so much with the photograms. But anyway.
Yep. Nope. The film's still there.
The photograms are very messy, so I don't do as much film-based work when the darkroom is set up for photograms.
I'd love the video series that you did for the artist in residence, and I'd love to see that in person someday. I think there's a whole choreography there. Tell me about teaching. Tell me about the remote teaching. Tell me about the in-person stuff, because my God, I mean, to learn from this would be just great.
Well, I'm still working towards the beginning of in-person in New York. I did teach a brief photograms course in person in California this past summer, which is when I was collecting the materials. But basically, when I lost my prior job with the pandemic and started investing in photograms, I suddenly had a process to start to offer Penumbra Foundation, which back then was purely alternative and experimental photography. They didn't do much film, like traditional film photography, which now they do more of that. But at the time, before that, I didn't have anything to pitch to them. And I was like, because I always wanted, I grew up teaching. I never got my MFA. So, I've been kicking myself for years trying to find a way to do it, but it's just not feasible with having to be able to afford rents here. But at some point, anyway, I wanted to get back into teaching. And somehow I figured out a way to teach my processes remotely to students that could DIY makeshift darkrooms at home. You know, all they needed was a light-tight space with room to work. And they can make beautiful prints and learn from Zoom. I mean, they'd have to do some tweaks and a little bit of modifications, but I had this process to offer. So at first, my first Zoom class was through Penumbra Foundation, which is online. And it was amazing. And it was a lot of fun. And I learned from that class. And then one of my first private students, she was actually an Irish student that stayed up late to take that class, which is amazing because she was, it was a night class. So she was up until like 11 o'clock her time. Maybe it was later than I forget exact time. But she stayed up late to take the class, basically. And then she became my first private Zoom student. And thankfully, other students came through. I mean, it hasn't been stable, so it's tough. But I mean, I have been very lucky as far as being able to just keep promoting, my private instruction. People have come through. I'd like that to be a lot more stable, but again, being private, that's tough. I am pitching classes elsewhere. I'm between classes, I think, until summer for the bigger organizations, most likely. So there have been some challenges. I've been also lucky in the print sales department, but that too is not yet stable.
Right.
I mean, it's just tricky because I've been home and I've been working remotely for so long. I'd love to have like a part-time stable job, but like what I've been doing for work for the past 4 years, just like most places are like, what, huh? Like, we don't get like, why'd she want to work here? it's very stressful, but I'm very grateful that I have had, private students reach out. And I'm also doing, actually right now, one of the rewards for my campaign is discounted printing instruction to try to get that more stable. But basically anyone that has, a shed, a basement, a bathroom, like a room that they can like block the light out of. They have room to put a table in. They can print from home, and it's really fun. They order the materials and I have them get chemicals that aren't too bad. And they use water instead of acid stop bath.
For now.
Nice even grace, but I mean, it's tough, because right now, again, things are not in person and
yeah.
Yep. My rent is about to go up even more. So it's, kind of scary, but I'm so thankful that this has fallen into my lap. I grew up, my mother had a reading clinic in our home. So I grew up teaching. One of my early majors was education. I just couldn't deal with the public school system, but I always regretted not getting my master's and this brought me back to teaching. So it's been amazing.
I would imagine you are a remarkable, wonderful, wonderful teacher. Tell me, I want to go back to an idea here and really sort of wrapped up around this idea of spiritual landscape and integrity and stuff. You have this series out there called Winds of Change right now. I'm looking at it online as we're talking. Really, really compelling stuff. And you call it location-specific photograms. And yet you've brought the location back to your own darkroom. I mean, you've got the little bottle of sand or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I mean, tell me about the depth of the integrity, the idea. I'm looking at these are one of a kind pieces of unique art. are they still pieces of landscape art?
They are. I mean, my work, even before I was actually getting the physical materials from specific locations, I was starting to see things in the prints from locations where I'd made film photographs before, like my image Lobos, The Way Through. That was one of the first images I saw the textures of Point Lobos of this one area. I think it's China Cove or Weston Beach, but there's this area where it just reminded me of the textures. And that was the turning point of that work. They were all basically abstract landscapes in their own right, like spiritual landscapes. But Lobos is what basically, that was the beginning of bringing it a step further. And then when I was in California, well, even before California, but that basically opened my mind to the whole idea of what if I were to like go there and like bring home materials, and then I could actually make like unique landscape photographs that are technically landscape photographs. You can't deny that they're landscape photographs because they're made with the land from there, you know? Right. So, but it's morphed. I mean, the location specific materials only happened because I was teaching a class in California. And while I was there, I collected some stuff and it shipped back to me, and I've managed to stretch it this long, but I mean, I'm running out of the Pacific Ocean. I didn't, you know, I could only get so much. but I mean, the goal is with this book, though, is to get a whole lot more from a whole different lot of different places. And
this book is going to have separate prints included in it, original pieces of art.
As part of the book, yeah.
There's another book that I had the chance to review recently where there was inside the back cover, there was an envelope. And in the envelope were a half dozen loose prints suitable for framing. And I'm looking at your stuff here. Especially, I mean, right now, the first one on your website under the series, Winds of Change, it's just called Wind and Sea Beach, then proper title still to come, you say. The paper it's on, you say, has been off the market for more than a decade. You've got the beach sand, the seaweed, you know, all this stuff in there. This little piece of art is never going to be duplicated or replicated anywhere on the planet. And I remember some other photographers talking about how many performances could they get out of a negative, you know, different interpretations when they're printing, this kind of stuff. You get one. I mean, you can't put it back in, you can scan it, obviously, but you can't make a duplicate of any of the stuff that you're doing.
No. I mean, these are one-of-a-kind prints. I mean, basically, because they're using it on the paper, you know, I mean, if it doesn't come out, it doesn't come out. Then you have to try again. But I mean, that's it, basically. I don't do any digital in my processes whatsoever. I mean, when I have access to a scanner, I scan the prints, you know, for promotional use and just to have, you know, for reference. And things like that. But I mean, I don't do any digital things to my prints. They're handcrafted, handmade, which is why this book is so amazing. Cause it's like a handcrafted book with the prints as part of the book. And also included, you know, it's just,
it's fine art.
It's just starting to hit me that it's real. Cause, things are kind of moving. I've been making a lot of preliminary studies for as soon as the funding comes through so I can start booking my travel. Really the first location specific photograms that I made in November, and they began as reward prints, actually, a lot of them, but also for the Winds of Change, which is my current series, and that's just the work guided me there. But they were landscapes, but now they're more refined landscapes. So it's, you can't deny that they're landscapes anymore.
Yep. No, and I mean, intimately, physically landscape images.
Like working that sand in there and like pouring the ocean, you know, pouring the Pacific a little bit sometimes. So it's a very physical process.
I'm just laughing because most of us are trying to keep the sand out of our cameras, and here you are pouring it on the print.
At some point, I need to have it proper cleaner in there because it's just I have a dry deck and I have a sump pump situation. So I've got all this sand and these foil pieces, you know, and glitter. And it's just I can't get it all out of there. Because film-based work, it's I clean as best I can. But luckily I do have someone that I can farm out for spotting. She's very quick that if I can't, it comes down to it. But I haven't had a problem, knock on wood, yet. But, you know, before the photograms, I would have freaked out if I was printing with all that stuff in there anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, you came upon something absolutely beautiful and really, really emotionally evocative, at least for me.
A lot, yeah.
Kimberly, I'm impressed. I hope you get 100,000 people, you know, that sign up for the book, and I hope you get twice that for the teaching, because this is, I'm going to use a technical term here, this is really cool stuff.
Well, I really appreciate that. So. It's come a long way. And again, like in the beginning, I was so in my head about it. It's, you know, I work with a lot of straight photographers that they have a hard time getting used to the idea of, wait, can I do this? Is that okay? You know, and I'm like, can I put my materials here? Is it okay if I do this? Is it okay if I move this? I'm like, as long as you feel safe, go ahead. You know, it's a very, there's a freedom in this process. So like, it takes a while to get used to. Like once you get into it, it's like hard to reel it back in.
Kimberly, thank you. I've enjoyed this. I enjoyed the artist in residence videos earlier. I am a deep fan. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Frames. Because excellent photography belongs on paper. Visit us at www.readframes.com.